And wholesaling real estate's an interesting business because I don't think there's very many businesses where a one or two person business can realistically make seven figures with no following.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
All right. Beautiful. Mike DeHaan, what's up, buddy?
What's up, man? Appreciate you having me back.
Dude, I'm excited. And now we're here in person in Austin, Texas. We're doing more of these in person and these freaking crushed, dude.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, man. So yeah, you and I have known each other for, I think, going on 3 or 4 years now.
Probably up there. Yeah. Since I joined GoBundance almost 4 years ago now. I met you pretty shortly after that. So it's been a while.
Yeah. So today's episode is going to be super fun because for people that are listening, we've already had you on the show and we went in depth into your wholesaling business, your wholesaling operation. And me and you talk all the time about like my business and your business. And we share a lot of really good ideas back and forth. And because I just did this webinar with Pace Morby. So for people that are listening, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Pace. We did this webinar where we're talking about what would you do to make your first 100,000 in 30 days? What would you do to make your first million? What would you do to get to 10 million? And so today, what I want to do is go through that framework with you and then ask you these questions and we can go just back and forth and share different answers. And I think they'll be really beneficial for the audience. But first, before we get started, people that are unfamiliar, who is Mike DeHaan? Walk us through your business super quickly.
Yeah, I am a real estate wholesaler. That's my primary business. And I guess the thing that we do that's unique is we actually stand up and operate wholesale businesses for people in their respective markets. So you want to start up a wholesale operation in Austin, Texas, you come and work with us. We bring the marketing team, we bring the sales team, and we basically run the entire back end. You help move the contracts, and then you're the beneficiary of the upside on all those deals.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what's the revenue that y'all are doing from your wholesaling business versus done for you service?
Yeah. So it's all mixed together because I'm technically a client of my own business.
Sick.
Right. And so, yeah, like I'm my own partner in my own business using the same systems and the same team. And we did about 3.5 million last year.
And you were taking home about a million, right?
I did that 1 year. As we reinvested the business last year, I made about 500 grand.
Oh, man.
Only, yeah. And the funny thing is, though, is after a certain point where they say there's not exponential happiness.
Correct.
Like we can already travel. My wife and I are big into traveling, doing other things. Like I know you are too. We have a nice house. I'm not really into cars or gadgets or those sort of things. And it's honestly becomes a game after a while.
Yeah.
And it's more just like a comfort level thing, or it's like nice to have money where you could afford stuff if you wanted to, even though I have no intention of ever like buying a Ferrari or things like that. But yeah, it's a fun thing to build. I'm a builder at heart and that's what I enjoy. So
I think it's funny because people ask, why do you do it? Why do you keep going more and more after you hit that point? So I think this year we'll probably be there to where that's what I could take home. Mm-hmm. It's because it's different to make it gross than what you could actually take home, like the net.
Yeah.
And Ben Kenny, who was also on this show, he said the same thing. He said 500,000 for him. He could stay anywhere he wanted, buy any house he wanted, and he was good. And then after that, he had to create different games for himself to play.
Exactly.
So he's like, how do I gross a million? How do I net a million? How do I pay my top five people a million? And then how do I comfortably give $1 million away personally each and every year? So then that's the game that we play. And I think it's like, just a giant game. Like in entrepreneurship in general, that's why we keep going, is we just are addicted to the game of it.
For sure. And it's very fulfilling as well to feel fully in control of the direction that you're going, mm-hmm. both financially, but also with your day-to-day life. I mean, we're recording this right now at 10 o'clock on a Thursday. Most people are in a W-2 office right now, and I've already worked out for an hour and a bit. Now we're going to record a podcast. We're going to work out again. We're going to go play disc golf this afternoon. Like having the ability to do that is honestly what it's all about. Yeah. And like everyone, when they think about financial freedom, think about being able to live wherever, buy the nice house, go sit on the beach and drink margaritas. But honestly, once you have that, it gets boring relatively quickly. And it's more about being able to have flexibility with just like every single day. So
Yeah. So today's episode, what we're going to do is we're going to go through some different hypothetical scenarios, and then me and you can riff and figure out what would you do, what would I do, and we can come up with business plans together for people that are listening so that they can both in real estate and in business themselves, because you've been on both sides of it and I've been on both sides of it, to where we've had like the passive income and we've had active income. And now we both do what we call passionate income. We'll go through a couple of different scenarios and we'll come up with a consensus of here is our best practice advice for somebody that is in this situation. Mm-hmm. So the first prompt that I want to give is you have 30 days. You're starting from zero, no network, no nothing. And you have to make $100,000. Yeah. How would you best go about that?
Yeah. 30 days is tough for that, right? Especially with no network, no anything.
We'll say 90. We'll say 90.
90. Days. Yeah. And 90 is more reasonable for sure. I think this is right out of Alex Ramosi is you find something that's expensive and you sell to somebody for more, right? That has a $100,000 margin. Mm-hmm. And I guess from my perspective, if you wanted to do that, if you were able to figure out how to wholesale a commercial real estate deal, probably be pretty close. The challenge with that is going to be the closing time would probably be pushing on that 90 days, but that would definitely be a way you could do it. Another thing I know you could do, and we beta tested this with our show on collecting keys, mostly as just like a challenge, but you can arbitrage services, right? And people don't always understand this, but essentially what you can do is you can market for a service. It's what a lot of roofing companies do. And then you go and you hire someone to actually do that service and you basically have a margin on the middle. And we got into a engagement my business partner did with somebody on Instagram about how it was harder to make that a first initial batch of money. And so he just ran a Facebook ad for 3 days advertising deck replacement. And he went out and somebody replied to the ad. He went out and quoted the guy to replace the deck, had our contractor do it for 10 grand less, and he made 10 grand. It took him like 3 days to do that. So I think if you were able to arbitrage a service-based model like that or find a larger asset that you could sell or some kind of margin, that'd probably be the easiest way to do it. Instead of a lot of people trying to do like these smaller ticket transactions, like selling widgets, things like that, or selling hours, I don't think it would be possible.
Yeah. So what's the difference between wholesaling a house versus wholesaling a piece of commercial real estate? Still same like acquisition disposition process, just translated into the commercial world, correct?
Yeah. But the challenge is your buyer pool is going to be significantly smaller.
Correct.
You're going to have higher price points. The finance is going to be more complicated unless you have some of that as cash, which is possible. And then the analysis that your buyer is going to want to do is going to be significantly more in-depth than like a residential property. Because on residential, you can look at comps. You can have a hard money lender that will honestly check you on the value if you're trying to buy a deal that's bad. That's what mm-hmm. your buyer can use. But on the commercial side, you're going to need like a pro forma. They're going to want to do the analysis. If they are raising money, that's going to take some time. If they're going to get a commercial loan, that's going to take 60 to 90 days at least. But there is huge margin you can make on those. Like it's not uncommon for people to wholesale commercial real estate and make multi six figures or even seven figures. I've heard about people doing.
You and I both know somebody that was making $1 million a transaction and now I think he's in federal prison.
I think so too.
So
that's true. Oh yeah.
So you can get greedy.
You can get greedy. And on that one, he was doing stuff that was illicit around that. Mm-hmm. Right. He was intentionally hiding things or structuring deals in kind of a sketchy way. And the funny thing about real estate in general is there's so many different subjective parts to it. And there is honestly opportunity to manipulate numbers. It just comes down to ethically, you shouldn't do that. And then also legally, if you get caught doing stuff like that, you do go to jail. Like there's no way around that. So
yeah. So let's sit on this 100K for a little bit. Mm-hmm. People that are trying to replace their income, like there's obviously, it's very difficult to purely passive income your way out. That's what we do in Action Academy. And you're in there as well, helping people a lot. We appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah.
But it's just like, there is a passive component where, yes, you're buying your multifamily, you're buying your commercial properties, you're buying your businesses. I think businesses are perhaps the best cash flow vehicle mm-hmm. if you do it successfully. But people are looking at wholesaling and land flipping or just assigning contracts. And they're asking the question, what is actually required for me to net $100,000 doing this in a year?
Yeah.
And I don't know of anybody that's better than you, because me and you like have gone over this 1,000 times where we say, okay, somebody's going into this and they say, okay, I make $100,000 a year. I need to replace that income so that I can focus on the passive asset. Mm-hmm. And then they jump in and they're like, I'm going to learn from Mike. I'm going to learn from Action Academy. And then they're like burning out.
Yeah.
After a month or yeah. two. So what is actually required? What are the actions? What is the volume required to actually yield $100,000 take home?
Yeah. So on the wholesaling side, you're going to either need a lot of capital or a lot of hustle. Mm-hmm. Right. And wholesaling real estate's an interesting business because I don't think there's very many businesses where a one or two person business can realistically make seven figures with no following, right? A very unsophisticated system. It honestly just like hustling and making connections. So that's really what it is. You're brokering a discounted property from a motivated seller with a motivated buyer who wants to buy a discounted deal. And you can do that either with a sniper approach where you are going out and you're hitting the pavement, you're calling people directly and you're putting a ton of time and legwork into it, or you can do it with a mass marketing approach, which has an extremely low barrier to entry where you can just pull public lists and you can mail or put people into a dialer, right? And reach out to a ton of people very quickly. And then it comes down to identifying opportunity and finding those, the buyers that want to buy them. And we have some people in our community that have done seven figures in a year as literally them in a VA. Right. And they have nobody's ever heard of these people. Like they're not out there talking about on Instagram. They're in their business grinding. And that's fully doable. But I think the biggest challenge is most people, they want it to happen immediately. And really, if you think about it, you're working with people that are selling their largest asset that they own at a discounted price. They're probably going to buy or sell one or two pieces of real estate a year. And us, the entrepreneur, we commoditize that and we don't treat it with respect. And so we go into these things transactionally. And we're talking to a widower, telling her about how her kitchen sucks, how her roof sucks. She's going to have to do all this work on the house. She doesn't care about that. What she wants is to be heard and to be able to know that she's going to be secure when she sells this house. People that understand that and come from a background that supports that, they can make $100,000 in 90 days very easily. It's more like the visionary that comes in and is like looking at like the dollar signs at the end of it. They tend to struggle because they don't have the empathetic side to it.
EQ.
Yeah, exactly. There's a ton of different ways to approach it. But to answer the question, it's going to require capital to invest in marketing. It's going to require a ton of hustle if you don't have the capital. And honestly, it's going to require a little bit of luck and a lot of patience, but it's not impossible. And I've seen a lot of people within a year that are making multi six figures and sometimes even pushing that seven figure point.
So right now we're going into Q2 and a lot of people are struggling with what are my quantifiable goals? Mm-hmm. So in the wholesaling world, if you could chunk it down to three categories of action, three categories of goals, yeah, what are some good quantifiable rules of thumb that you should do? For instance, in sales, I'd say if you go and you make 100 cold calls per week and you go knock on the doors of 50 businesses, you can reasonably expect to set 11 to 12 meetings from that. And from those, you should reasonably expect to close about 40%. And that is literally what I did step by step to make $250,000 a year as a sales rep.
Yep.
So I could say that today, and years later, I still remember what my metrics were. Mm-hmm. So for somebody that's like getting into wholesaling or getting into real estate, and they're struggling to compartmentalize their actions and put a quantifiable goal each quarter, what's some benchmarks and some advice you can give on the goal setting process?
Yeah. So there's basically three parts of the business. There's going to be marketing, there's going to be sales, there's going to be networking. Okay. The marketing is where your leads are going to come from. The sales is how you're going to close those leads, and networking is going to how you're going to sell them at the end of it. So quantifiable goals on a quarterly basis is committing to doing an X amount of outreach per month, whether that's you cold calling, whether that's doing direct mail, doesn't really matter what it is. Set a realistic figure that you can stick to and do it for a 90-day span. And then on the sales side of it, too many people focus on the new leads that come in, which are important, but everyone neglects like the lead snowball that you've built on day 90 that started on day one. And so being consistent with that follow-up is honestly 95% of the business. The people that are good at follow-up, they get significantly more deals than everyone else for way less spend because they're not always trying to find the newest prospect. Same with every business, right? Like I'm sure with Action Academy, you have to do long-term follow-up on stuff. And a good metric on that is don't let anyone sit in your system for more than 3 or 4 days that hasn't been outreached to in some way, unless they specifically ask you to stop calling them. Okay. And they call them, text them, leave them a voicemail, send them an email if that's their jam, whatever they do, reciprocate that back to the lead. And then on the networking side, you want to find as many buyers as you can and exactly what their buy box is. A buyer is not someone that says, I would like to buy real estate. Everyone wants to buy real estate until you bring them a deal and you say, this is how much money it's going to cost. And then all of a sudden, no one wants to buy it. Finding people that very specifically say what they want to buy, how much they're willing to pay for it, and when exactly they're looking to purchase. And then you find the seller that matches that person's buy box and you connect the two. And it's pretty simple after that. And so, yeah, just having consistent marketing on a monthly basis, not letting any leads sit for more than 3 or 4 days. And if you were to add 10 buyers a week, you'd be able to have a very successful business very quickly.
Marketing, sales, and networking.
Exactly. It's every other business, honestly.
Dude, I love that. Because even with people that are buying like self-storage or mobile home parks or multifamily, I'm like, okay, how many leads are coming across your desk? How many offers are you submitting? and how many people are you networking with for potential operations and capital?
Exactly.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
But then we get goals that are like, oh, I want to be an LP this quarter. It's not going to move the needle.
Yeah. And also you could do that tomorrow if you wanted to.
Correct.
I mean, you can contact anybody, like, right, and go buy it. Everyone's looking for investors all the time. It's almost, if you're an LP, it takes you 24 hours, you did your quarterly goal, good job.
Yeah.
Right.
So for $100,000, what I would do personally is, because this is your expertise, and then my expertise is in marketing, sales, and coaching. Sure. So like for me, what I would do is I would find a very specific problem that was an expensive problem. It wouldn't necessarily be what I do today, but it would preferably be something that somebody has done before or they had an industry that was adjacent to it. So I call it like tapping into your body of knowledge. Cal Newport called it career capital, right? So where it's, there was a guy that I worked with that's, we sold uniforms and he was driving the box trucks to go deliver the uniforms. Yeah. And then his side hustle that he created, that was a six-figure side hustle, is that he went to the GM of our location and he said, hey, I'll come out and clean the trucks. And I was like, dude, how freaking smart is that? So he rigged up his own personal truck with cleaning chemicals and he would buy them from CentOS, the company we were working for. And then he would go out mobily and wash down the trucks wherever they were, if they weren't in the fleet lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, that's so smart. For people that are like starting like side hustles, they want to coach or they want to help somebody, it's like I tell them, go back to what you already knew previously and then just spiderweb adjacent to it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, I would go find 10 people that I could coach for $1,000 a month. And then that's immediately going to be like that recurring income.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do.
Yeah. And it was interesting too, because I was thinking about your model, you see it that way. I know what's common in the online coaching space is you have a challenge that's like a higher ticket. If you want to make 100 grand in the next 90 days,
mm-hmm.
you say, this is where we're going to start. This is where you're going to be at the end of the 90 days. Make it a super premium service. And people pay big money for that. We have our coaching community called Scale that we have under our podcast, and it's for real estate business owners. And in that, we did an accelerator that was a $15,000 item, mm-hmm. right? Which it was basically very explicit one-on-one coaching with us for a 90-day span. And we sold, I think, 5 of those in 2 weeks, right? And so you need a little bit of a following to do that. But if you can create a good value proposition, you can definitely sell those high-ticket items pretty quickly in 90 days.
Yeah, I think so too. Because it all just comes down to how many units at what price point yields this.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with wholesaling, same thing with business in general. It's like, how many customers, so what's your sales velocity? How many customers are coming through the door? What is the LTV? What is the lifetime value of that customer? So how much is that customer worth to you? And then what's the cost to acquire the customer? So then the game is, how do we broaden the discrepancy between the LTV and the CAC?
Mm-hmm.
So for us right now, we're at about a 14.5:1. For our CAC, we spent about $500, and then our LTV is increasing and increasing as we add ancillary businesses and services. So like, those are the only two levers that you can pull is, okay, bringing in more customers, or how do you make the customer that you have more valuable,
mm-hmm.
right? So the next question that we went over on this webinar altogether was, what is the fastest and best way to make your first $1 million if you're starting over from scratch? And we'll say in equity, we'll say net worth instead of $1 million in cash.
Sure.
What's the fastest and best way to make your first million?
The fastest and easiest way is to buy discounted real estate, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even coming from like a bias standpoint, that's what I do, but it's literally math.
Correct.
You know, you live somewhere, the house costs 400 grand. If you're able to buy it for $200,000, you can go and get a hard money loan, raise a private investor to give you the down payment if you need to do that. You just added $200,000 on your net worth the second that you bought that $400,000 house for 200 grand. You do that, what, 5 times? Cool. Now you have $1 million net worth. And oversimplified maybe, but that's literally what I did. That's what a lot of other people do. And the unfortunate thing was, when it's in equities, you're not rolling at that point. You need to transact and sell those if you want to actually collect that cash. But doing it from on a paper standpoint, you can use debt, you can refinance, you can collect a lot of those gains. And that is something that somebody could easily do in the next 6 months if they wanted to.
Do you think that the $1 million in equity or the $1 million in revenue was harder?
$1 million in revenue was harder. For
so,
sure.
much harder.
So much harder.
So much harder.
But yeah, like honestly, like I had $1 million net worth far before we did $1 million in revenue in our business. Because again, you're just buying that discounted property, right? And you don't need that much money to do it because you're using leverage.
Mm-hmm.
When you already have the equity upside, the second that you close and you realistically only need 10% of that additional contracted price. So like, to make that $200,000 in equity, in that example I had before, you only need $20,000 to $30,000, which is realistically one wholesale deal, right? So think about that way. If you went and wholesaled one deal for 30 grand and you rolled it into a $400,000 house that you're buying 50% off, every one of those wholesale deals, you can add $200,000 to your net worth if you want to, right? So you're just rolling it into the next one that comes through.
Yeah. That's what I think is important for people to distinguish between what game are you playing?
Yeah.
Are you playing the cash flow game or are you playing the equity game?
Mm-hmm.
Because in equity, like the way that I view equity is in three different ways. You have single family real estate equity, then you have like commercial real estate equity, and then you have small business equity.
Yeah.
So it's all about valuation. So the single family is like, yeah, you buy for $200,000, and then you have the ARV, you buy it for 70% of the ARV minus repair costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you are able to refinance it, pay back your private investor. All right. So you're going to get 100,000, maybe 300,000 pops there, mm-hmm, just by buying crappy houses,
yep,
like B class, like C class, D class, and making them pretty and putting a tenant in it, the Burr process. Then you go to the commercial and then it's significantly larger, right? Now you're talking about cap rates. So the commercial is like operating a business within real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So the commercial is like, how do I increase the NOI, the net operating income? So maybe now instead of adding $100,000 of value to the single family, you're increasing the NOI by $100,000, which may yield you a $500,000 return.
Yeah.
And then they go into business, which is the greatest of all time, which is now it's all about multiples of revenue. So if you increase the net revenue by 100,000, yeah, then you can get that 5 to 10x on that multiple of your business valuation.
Sure.
So that's why I think business is the most fun.
Yeah.
For all of this?
Yeah. It takes the best advantage or opportunity cost for that money. The funny thing is, though, is honestly, I feel like people, especially when they're early on in their, let's say, financial growth period, they focus too much on net worth and they're trying to build that equity and those sort of things. I think it's because they have a scarcity mindset and it feels weird to want to make a lot of money or have a lot of money. And in my opinion, you shouldn't really be focused on trying to build equity or hold these properties or do different things until you're making a high income.
Correct.
Because otherwise what you do is you just hamstring your growth because you dump all of your money into an illiquid asset and you have no ability to buy your next one. Like, and they, you know, you see this all the time in Action Academy, but it's such an interesting thing to me. And I don't know why you meet people that are so financially educated, like they know how to make money, they know how to do things, but they still are stuck onto this, like, I need to buy assets, and they're driving like an old used car and they're living in a living situation that they're not super stoked with.
And they're so proud of it.
They're so proud of it.
It's like a badge of honor and they're putting it online. Oh, yeah. I drive a Camry.
Yeah.
Brother, you are worth $20 million.
I know. Do something with it. It doesn't make any sense, honestly. And because there's no shame in having liquid capital and taking some of your gains and actually going and living your life with it. But I don't know. It's an interesting mentality. That's also too why I tend to steer new people away from doing some of the larger commercial assets or triple net industrial, these large multifamilies. People are drawn to those and they always look at the NOI, mm-hmm, or situation you just said. I want to be able to increase the rents and increase the value that much. That's awesome. But then like you have to raise money to do that. You have to bring on a bunch of additional debt. You have to give most of your money to your investors because if you're doing a proper LPGP structure, there's all these different things that you have to take into account when realistically there is hundreds of millions of single family homes out there that you just need to find 5 or 6 and you can literally have that $1 million net worth. You can have that high potential to liquidate that because you can sell those in 30 to 60 days, right? And you don't have to take nearly as much risk and there's much more opportunity to do that and the barrier to entry is much lower. But people, they like, I don't know, I don't think they understand the opportunity that's truly there and they like the simplicity or they want to be able to tell people they own a 50-unit apartment complex because owning 6 houses isn't as sexy sounding, but realistically, it can be the same net to that person, right? And it's, you know, people, they need to understand the full potential and the full picture, not just get caught up in what people get excited about on the internet.
I 100% agree with you, but I also like, we'll push back a little bit.
Sure.
So the way that we view it is because our entire thing is buying commercial real estate and business acquisition. So how we view it is, what is the time cost on evaluating a skill set?
Mm-hmm.
You spend a year or two perfecting the skill of buying single family, right? Where you could have spent that year or two, because all roads eventually lead down to commercial, eventually,
mm-hmm,
for the most part, because everybody that does commercial, like I'm about to do a podcast with Matt Aitchison,
yeah,
after this, and I'm about to be a guest on his, and he's a mutual friend of ours, and he flipped 500 homes, and he's like, damn, like, I wish I would have gotten into commercial sooner.
Yep.
So I'm like, if you're going to spend a year or two learning a skill set, might as well learn the commercial skill set,
mm-hmm,
because then it compounds. But yes, it may be slower in the beginning and you obviously need to be doing it with other people in partnerships. I wouldn't just like raw dog it like Grant Cardone recommends. Just go buy a 100-unit apartment, yeah, complex by yourself. It's a terrible idea. That's the worst idea ever. Like, dude, you're going to screw it up so much.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting to learn the skill. And I think that you're right. There is an opportunity cost there. But then when it comes to scalability,
sure,
then that's a whole different conversation. Because a lot of people that we speak with, they already have a couple single family. But then they do the math on it, right? From a rental perspective. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I tell people all the time. And then they just blows their freaking brains, is we're doing a cash flow analysis and they're saying, okay, I buy two houses a year. I save up money, I buy a house. I save up money, I buy a house. I'm like, that's wonderful. You are ahead of 95% of people. Mm-hmm. You're making $200 per house. Best case scenario in today's interest rates. Mm-hmm. So this one person, I was like, how much do you need for you and your wife to be completely retired? They said $20,000 a month. I said, okay, cool. If we do the math here, increasing your income by $400 by these two houses per year, then you're going to have $2,000 a month in cash flow at the end of 5 years. And he goes, oh my God. Because they don't even think about that.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking about the net worth game and mm-hmm. the equity game. And their net worth, I'm sure, is wonderful. But yeah, net worth doesn't pay the bills.
Sure. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think that you're right. Everything does eventually lead to commercial. So I'm in Matty A's, his Wise Investor mastermind, because I'm looking to make that transition as well. But I've also already made my money on the residential
space. Correct. You made your cash flow.
Yeah. Even then, my cash flow isn't awesome. So I own 52 individual residential properties. Okay. Mm-hmm. Last year, we netted like $75,000 across all those.
Mm-hmm.
CapEx items, everything's always coming up. There's always expenses, right? And then
always
nice tax increases for everybody just axed our cash flow almost in half, as everyone saw as the valuations came out on these properties have all appreciated, right? But as I look at that, the benefit that I have now, because I have a high income for my business, is the tax benefits. And so it makes sense for me to hold on to a good chunk of those. But I have been liquidating properties to go and look at larger assets like commercial assets, or honestly, for me, even just going into debt, because I've already made that money. So I have a hard money business that I operate that I just lend it out to people that are within my sphere. And that gives me the cash flow. Okay. And then, but like the opportunity cost of dumping it all into assets versus into the business is never going to be quite the same. Cause you know how it is too, like mm-hmm. talking about your cost of acquisitions before, if you go and you put money into that, up to a point, you're going to keep making more money back at a significantly higher rate with new members, but you will eventually reach a cap where you're going to need more teams, start to see it taper off.
Correct. Right?
At that point, that's when you go and look to invest that money, because you've already maximized your ROI on the business side.
Bingo.
Okay. And I think that until people have gone down the entrepreneurial rabbit hole, they just don't always understand how that works.
And there's so many different ways to do it. And there is no right way. It's like whatever way is right for you. Mm-hmm. So I find that really interesting, because I just did a couple of days ago where I was talking about imposter syndrome that pops up for me, because it's like I sold all my real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sitting on cash.
Yeah.
And like for people that have sold their real estate, I'm sure you've been in that position before too. It's actually the worst.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there and you're like, what do I talk about on podcasts now?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a good amount of cash. What do I do? Because I just was buying single family houses and they appreciated out the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got money, but now I'm just doing exactly what you're talking about, to where it's okay, keeping your one thing. And so I'm like, let's focus on this cash flow vehicle. Let's grow this thing up to where it's a self-sustaining beast by itself. It's got an operations team. Everyone is churning. Everyone is rocking. And we've got the cash flow coming in, exactly what you're talking about. I think a key distinction to make is you aren't hitting the streets wholesaling.
Mm-mm.
Like, you've got a wholesaling business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you have operations and systems and team that are running so that you don't have to be there. You can go over to Africa and do the safari like you and your mm-hmm. wife did.
Yep.
So it's just like, that's what we're doing this year. And then we're going into commercial through boutique hotels and like 16 to 30 room. And I went and toured to Mexico and I was just like, dude, I want them now.
Yeah. The funny thing is though, is that real estate's the gateway to business. You did the real estate thing that sort of gave you the intro to what business can look like.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going back into real estate from a business perspective, because a boutique hotel is not going to be a passive investment.
Not at all.
It's not like buying a 30 unit apartment complex where you just go and put in a property manager.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah. You're going to have marketing around it. You're going to need to have structure and teams. You're going to have a lot of logistics to go through, like the cleaners and the maintenance and everything else. And so that makes more sense for you to do that, because you've already developed that skill set. And I guess going back to making that first $1 million net worth, you can do that very easily by just going and acquiring assets. But the question is that what you really want? Like, honestly, or do you just want to be able to tell people that you're worth $1 million, even if you can't look like you're worth $1 million?
I had a call with our friend Ben Call, and he said that to me because I've got another friend, Adit, that went and bought $20 million of hotels in 2022. I'm like, I could go do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ben goes, but why?
Yeah.
I was like, Got it. And Hormozi has this quote where he goes, the woman in the red dress mm-hmm. doesn't go away. She just looks better and better and better. Yep. Because now you have all these people that are like trying to come in. So now this stretched it even more because this was, I already have an answer for this one. So I'm curious about what your answer is for this one, but this one's difficult. So they asked, you have 3 years, 3 year timeline to create a $10 million net worth position. What are you doing?
Yeah, $3 million to create $10
million. 3 years to create a $10 million net worth position. And we had Pace Morby. We had Amy Majori, who's coming on this podcast. We had some freaking ballers, and they all gave their answers. And I had my specific answer. I'll give you a hint. It was business related instead of real estate, which I think is where you're probably going to go to.
For sure.
But I'm curious what your answer is, because that was a cool thought experiment.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I would probably do right now is I would probably sell all of my rentals and look to invest that into my own business and systems. Or what I would probably do, and I am thinking about doing this actually, just like very literally, selling all my rentals, putting a certain amount into a debt fund so that it would just pay my bills. I don't have to worry about money. And then everything that I do out of the business, I can just double down and roll it back into the business, into systems, into marketing, and everything else. And I would probably not do that in the wholesale realm because the transaction time is too long. I would probably go more into the education and the podcasting side because the rate of cash flow that you can get is significantly faster than a wholesale business. And now that we have like the basic platform and the systems to be able to dump money into that, it's definitely something that would be more doable versus if I was like a newbie and I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah. What I said, and this one made me proud, man. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
This one made me proud. Pace Morby was like, yo, like, dude, that was a good answer. Yeah. I was like, thanks, Pace. Because that dude, like, he crushed it. He just thinks at a level 100. So what I said, and what I've seen from a couple of our mutual friends, people on the podcast, is I would go and I'd be buying up local service companies. Mm-hmm. So like Cody Sanchez, but just one industry. So you're buying up laundromats, you're buying up HVAC companies, you're buying up car washes, and you're buying up a very specific niche asset class, and you are going 100 miles an hour on this one, like we'll say car washes, and you're going to be going and trying to seller finance all the car washes that you can within your state or within your tri-state area. That is what you're doing over 3 years, and you're consolidating all of them. You're doing a nice consolidated brand, nice consolidated system. You're cleaning up the books. You're getting these seller finance or sub two because they're all mom and pop owners. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that 3 years, then you're going to package them all together. You're going to have a central operations team with three levels of management. And then you're going to go to a private equity like a BlackRock or someone. And you're going to say, hey, I'm willing to sell these for all as a bundle. And then at that point, you and whatever equity partners you have can all walk away with $10 million in cash.
Yeah.
That's how I would do it.
Yeah, it's not a bad play. I think the challenge...
It's all challenging. This is all hard as hell.
You could definitely do it on paper. I think the thing that regularly gets discounted is the transaction time to do all that stuff.
Correct.
And we deal with this a lot.
And the difficulty.
On the real estate zone. Yeah, the difficulty to find them. But then I would imagine that the sales cycle on that when you were finding the local mom and pop would be 60 days, like 3 to 6 months probably, because you now have to convince them to walk away from their life's work and cash out, which a lot of them, if they were interested in doing that, they would be advertising it, at which point every single person that's in that space is already offering them. Correct. So you'd have to find them yourself, which would be hard. And then the actual acquisition process, depending on if you're going to get SBA loans or those sort of things, can take a very long time as well. Honestly, the time aspect is a barrier that many people discount.
Yeah.
You know? And then also too, if you're going to sell private equity, that's really going to take you a year.
Yeah. Even when they express interest, then you're going to have to be going through your books and everything.
Because they'll want to see you maintain the business throughout that year. They want to make sure that they're not just looking at like a period of time where you got lucky and now they're buying a business that's actually a falling knife. I actually have one of my GoPod brothers in GoAbundance. He has an insurance mitigation business. So they do like asbestos cleanup and they clean up like bodies and stuff out of houses. And he got approached by private equity and now he's in the process of selling. It's expected to be a 15-month timeline to do that. Right.
Dang.
And so that's a long time for his business has to continue growing at the rate that it's been, not even just maintain, but he has to double down now. Now it's time to get to work.
Yeah. And it benefits the private equity company to push it off because then they get more and more profits.
Exactly.
As it grows, it benefits them. It doesn't benefit you as the business owner.
Yeah.
So Dude, that was super interesting. So we got those three questions where it's like, how do you make your $100,000? How do you make your million? How do you make 10 million in 3 years? And I was like, oh, those are interesting prompts.
Yeah.
And I think that we covered them pretty well. Now I want to get back into the actual purpose of this podcast, which is leaving your job as we close this out here. And the question that I always have is, everybody wants to leave their job through real estate. What do people get wrong about that?
Yeah. Going back to what I said before, the biggest thing they try to do is they approach it from a passive income perspective and they save up and buy a house to make $200 a month. That doesn't make any sense, right? Unless you have an obscenely high income, which some people do, but at which case, I don't know, just save your money. You'll honestly get there faster. Just stop spending and put $1 million in the bank if you make $500,000 a year already, as opposed to trying to dump it into a bunch of single families. You'll have less headache and you will reach financial freedom a little bit earlier. So people approach it from the wrong perspective. I think focusing on that active income first and deciding what sort of part of that like vibes with you, whether it's wholesaling, whether it's land flipping, whether it's flipping houses, whether it's doing syndications, whatever it is, and being patient enough to do that for significantly longer than you want to do it. And that's the thing where most people get caught up is they get into something for 3 months and they're like, oh, I'm not rich yet. So I'm going to go and jump over to the next thing. And next thing they're spinning around and around and 5 years have gone by and they've gotten nowhere. So
I'm curious about this too, because I just had a couple of interviews with some guys and you talk to them, they're worth like 40 million plus. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh yeah, man, the hustle and grind. I used to do that. Yeah. That's not the answer. Mm-hmm. Curious. It's just, would they have gotten to where they were without the hustle and grind though? No.
Of course they wouldn't, right? That's like the perfect example of...
Kind of pisses me off.
Yeah, the thing that they tell you to do now is not what got them to where they are.
Correct. Right?
It's just like how so many people try to emulate the successful morning routine of the ultra rich, where they have the cold bath and they do the sauna and they go and they sun their perineum or they do whatever else.
Everyone wants to do the optimized routine, which sure. is just like Huberman. You do the cold plunge, you go talk to your wife one, wife two, wife three, wife four, yeah. wife five, and then you drink your Athletic Greens.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it takes 4 hours to start work at noon and then they quit working at 2 to go and watch the, you know,
yeah.
sunset for 3 hours or what the hell they're doing. But like, that is not what made that person successful. It never is. And if that is what made them successful, then they came with a bunch of financial upside that they didn't tell you about previously.
Yeah. Right?
So it goes away pretty quick. I will say that you need to learn to get out of that grind. Right. If you want to grow, that's honestly been a hard thing for me is as I've built out a team, I've learned that I perform better if I let them do their work. And I actually do allow myself to have some space.
What?
Yeah, I know it's crazy, but it's a hard thing for people to do.
Yeah.
Especially when you're starting out and you first started to make money and you bring on like a salesperson and they like botch a lead and they're like, oh, you know, my acquisitions guy, he really screwed up that lead and we didn't get the deal. And like, yeah, but that was you 6 months ago, dude. Like you were like literally that role. And so they have to go through the learning process as well. But as that starts to grow, it's so important that you do actually get out of that hustle and grind mode. Otherwise, you'll burn out. And what you'll find is you actually spend a ton of time working, but not actually doing anything. Mm-hmm. And so it's what's the point? You're not enjoying your life. You're working hard. Some people enjoy that, but if it's not truly productive, you can probably spend that time better doing something else.
Yeah, it's a funny contradiction. It's definitely a dichotomy because there's two ways to view it that way where you're just working to work. Mm-hmm. And then there's also another side of it where it's just like, I'm saying this from the frame of me. I'm single. I have no kids. Like now is the time to go. Mm-hmm. Like now's the time to, everything else is gone. Like focus on this, build what's going to be like lasting for the next couple of decades.
Yeah.
And so it's just, like, yeah, I want to work weekends because I enjoy it. But then what you say is also true. So that's the most difficult part for me as the business owner is there's truth in all of it. Mm-hmm. It's all true.
Yeah.
It is true. And I can, like, I'm like you, like, I can just not do that and everything will be fine. Like, I could just go have fun and travel. Like, I'm going to go for a month and a half to Europe again this summer. Nice. But it's just, okay.
Yeah.
It's like when you're doing that, you're like, huh, I want to work. Yeah.
Well, that's honestly one of my favorite things is having that flexibility to be able to work and do that. But yeah, I guess back to really quick what people else get wrong and that I admire about you, Brian, is that you jumped from the W-2 and you figured it out. Mm-hmm. I think that people that are really serious about wanting to leave their W-2 and have financial freedom, they honestly just need to do it. There's so many people that you talk to, like they're in a strong financial position. They have a high paying job. They're have been comfortable for most of their life. And they always talk about this risk of leaving their job. Like, oh, it's too risky for me to do that. They have a kid, they have whatever. And like, realistically, most of the things that people worry about, they're constructs by the W-2 enterprise, whatever you want to call that, to keep you in there. People always talk about like insurance, right? Or their 401k. None of that honestly matters. Like, you can pay for those things if you have a tiny bit of savings, a tiny bit of money. I mean, what does your insurance cost every
single month? $300.
$300, exactly. So my wife and I, we're $700 and we have like the middle tier plan a month. And sure, it's expensive when it's been paid for you forever. But if you go and you start even like the most minute business, you can afford all the things that you're worried about losing from leaving your W-2, but you're going to have more opportunity for your time. You're going to have complete mental freedom to be able to go and learn how to make actual money. And you're going to also be forced to do it because you're not going to be able to go back. And I think that honestly, unless you're in a really particular position where like you're truly making like a ton of money that you'd never be able to go back to, and you don't actually hate it that much, you should probably just burn the ships and jump into it full time.
The problem is debt.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Sure.
So that's why nobody does it, is because they have a $10,000 a month mortgage. They have four car payments. Right. They have their kids' school. They have Little League. I remember like there was a guy that I used to work with, and every single year he's the top guys. The top guy's name's Adam. And Adam, every single year, like I said, hey, dude, are you ever going to get out of this? Because I was beginning to talk about the idea of traveling around the world. And he goes, dude, do you know how much my kids like baseball is? He goes, dude, I'm spending like $1,000 a month just on my kid's baseball per kid. And I was just like, holy crap. Yeah, his burn was about $22,000 a month.
Yeah, see.
And it's not even like them buying Gucci or Dior or anything. They just have a nice house in a nice neighborhood with nice enough cars, with a nice enough baseball team for their kids and nice enough schools. And all of a sudden, it's just, now they're a slave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think my unpopular opinion on that is you've made your choices.
Correct.
Sorry, that's where you're at. You're not going to get the opportunity to have financial freedom like the
you can change.
Young bucks. You haven't done that without making major changes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Even on my end, so I quit my W-2 in 2018 with no real plan. I talked about this a little bit on your first show, but I was
insane. As an engineer to do that.
I was an engineer. My wife she was a graphic designer. Our household income was like 170, 180 grand in our mid-20s. And I just decided I was going to do anything else. And so I just pulled the plug. But building up to that, I had already been saving money. We bought a house. We had a low mortgage payment. So that was fixed. And we meal prepped our food. We didn't have a lot of like expensive like living things
that
we did. Yeah, made it work. And then when I left, we just brought stuff down even more. We went from being able to do whatever we wanted to clipping coupons. And that's what we had to do, right? But I had money saved up and I was able to take the leap. But without doing that, there's no way that I would have ever been able to figure out my business like I have. Because I didn't have a real estate background at all. Mm-hmm. And I just needed that mental freedom to be able to do it. And I think the other thing too is being willing to go back and do like the random stuff to make a little bit of money can go really far, like psychologically. So I went from working at Boeing, right, to working in a gym and driving for Uber. And a lot of people, they just, it feels like a huge step backwards. And I guess it is, but I was never happier in my life than at that point when I went from making 110 grand a year to making $15 an hour in a gym. Like, honestly, because I had the full mental bandwidth and freedom to be able to figure it out. And I think that if people really want it, they need to take that risk. Otherwise, you're just going to be fighting like an uphill battle the entire time.
Yeah. And they're burning the boats. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that changed my life was a coach asked me one time. I said, I need $20,000 a month of passive income to quit my job. And my coach was like, dude, why does it need to be passive?
Yeah, exactly.
And to this day, I'm still like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. That changed everything for me because I had $4,000 a month of passive income. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is, he's like, you're smart, dude. You'll figure it out with all your time back. And everybody discounts what they already know.
Yeah.
If you make six figures, you're pretty good at whatever you do. And like those skill sets transfer to something else. Like you will figure something out, even if it's just you as a single person without kids. Like, you're going to want to go have fun. So you're going to figure out something to do to make money on your own.
Yeah.
And people completely take that out of the equation. They're just like, no, I make $12,000 a month and my passive income is only $9,437.
Yeah.
I can't leave yet.
Yeah. And there's no way you can figure out how to make $3,000 or this what nothing you can cut out.
But
yeah. Insurance, right? Yeah. Well, you're out there increasing their expenses. So, yeah. I don't know. I'd say it's an interesting conundrum. And the funny thing is too, is you can tell people about it until they've fully experienced it. They'll just disagree with you to the moon and back.
Yeah.
Which is it's a funny hill to die on. But yeah, it's I'll also say it's not for everybody. And I think that's perfectly okay too.
By design.
Yeah, it's by design. There's this funny sort of thing, I think, with social media where everyone feels like they should have that lifestyle or like they are the right fit for it. And I will say that 99.9% of people are not cut out to be business owners, and that's perfectly fine. You just need to be honest with yourself and accept that.
That's the process we're going through with Action Academy right now. Is we have people coming up for renewal and we're having conversations with them and we're saying, hey, I don't think this was ever for you at all.
Yeah.
You haven't bought a house this year. You haven't done anything this year. And I don't think it's because they're incapable or it's because they're incompetent at all. I think it's just not what you want to do. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Hey, you can go do your own thing. That's perfectly okay.
Yeah.
Dude. So in closing, man, where can people find out more about you? Where can they learn about what you do with your business, with your wholesaling, with your education and your podcast?
Yeah. So I have my own show called the Collecting Keys Podcast. It is a real estate business show. So we have a lot of real estate operators on there, people that are honestly just like a lot of your listeners that are making seven figures plus, running mostly direct to seller real estate businesses. Everything from wholesaling to commercial assets to mobile home parks, people that are like doing it full time. And so that's the folks of our show there. And then you can follow me on Instagram at Mike_invests. I post a lot of wide ranging real estate content on there and I love to engage with people. So if you want to hit me up directly, that's the best way to do it.
Sweet. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll have both of those in the show description. Mike, thanks for everything, man. And let's go get a cold plunge. Let's go get a workout in, buddy.
Perfect. Awesome. And looking forward to it.
Sweet. Financial freedom. Pass it on. This has been Brian and Mike with the Action Academy Podcast, signing off.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, real quick. If you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want. And I can only do that with your help. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 or 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.